Hello and welcome to Total Football Analysis, this is La Liga Analysis Podcast, where we're here and today we are taking a special in-depth look into the Clásico. Real Madrid beat Barcelona, their first win at the Bernabeu in La Liga in the fixture since 2014. So a real landmark moment for Zinedine Zidane and his team. And today I, Sam Leveridge, am joined by DK at BarcaFront on Twitter. Say hi, DK.
Hi, folks.
And Scott Martin at Coach Scott Coppy on Twitter.
Welcome to the podcast.
So, guys, let's get stuck in. What did you think of the game?
It's pretty difficult to say. I mean, I personally, all biased aside, I enjoyed the game. It was quite entertaining. It was quite fast, which is, I guess, what you want from a Clásico. But at the same time, I feel like it wasn't really high quality. I mean, for one reason or the other, these games for the past couple of years, at least, have been kind of going down in quality, if I'm allowed to say that. But this is, I feel like this is good for the league as a whole because it makes the whole race a lot tighter. I mean, imagine if Barca had gone 5 points ahead of Madrid. I mean, I don't want to say it would be over, but it would be much smoother sailing for Barca until the end of the season. And this way, we have a true race until the very end. And it'll be interesting to see who comes on top.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely makes for a much more interesting race, and we'll see what kind of impact the progression through the Champions League has on it. But overall, Zidane can be happy with the result and the second half performance. I know Barcelona, especially Piqué, wanted a little bit more from that first half. You know, they had their chances. You know, even though their first half XG was only 0.71, I mean, when you really look at the quality of their chances, best three of the night came in that first half. So, you know, Real Madrid was able to handle the tide and then make some adjustments, and overall, great second half performance and a really big result.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it was a big result for Real Madrid, more psychologically than anything else. I mean, after that Man City defeat and then building back up, trying to get things going again. If they'd lost there, then, I mean, as DK says, it would have given Barcelona a bigger lead at the top of La Liga, and it could almost have been kind of the season over for Real Madrid all in 1 week. So, really important result.
Yeah, pretty huge for them, because I feel like Real Madrid are the team that can ride this momentum, if you will, much better than Barcelona, because this will be a huge boost, as you said. And for Barcelona, it's going to be a huge, you know, shot in the foot, because they somehow crumble under pressure. When things go sour for them, when things start pouring down, they just crumble. You know, and we've seen that in the Champions League for the past years. And I feel like this could be like something too big. You know, it feels like they won't be able to recover from this. I mean, yeah, it might be too drastic for me to say that at this point with, what, 12 games to go. But if the last couple of years have been any indication, I feel like Madrid just have to, you know, keep focused and just do their thing, and they should be fine.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to come down to the stability that Zidane provides. You know, he's such a cerebral presence on the sideline. He's a level-headed guy who keeps everyone focused and on task. You really don't see that with this Barcelona side. You know, there's not necessarily the presence from Setien that you see with Zidane, and granted, he's still growing into the job. But you look at the players on the field, there's no Puyol kind of leader to steady the ship. So, you know, like you said, when things go poorly for Barca, it's in bunches, and you don't really see anyone who can strain them.
Yeah, so should we start kind of looking at the lineups and seeing what we can kind of work out from that? Because I thought I was quite surprised with the Real Madrid lineup to see Marcelo in there ahead of Ferland Mendy. I was expecting him to come in. I mean, obviously played against City, and I thought he'd keep his place, even though he didn't have a great game, the Barcelona game. So that was the big surprise for me. I mean, I don't know what you guys thought of the lineups themselves.
Yeah, generally speaking, Zidane did pull out more surprised than Setien, Marcelo being the one. But more importantly, he kind of rectified that mistake and he put Cruz back in the lineup. That was crucial. I think that was crucial. But also, at the start of the game, I was having really difficulty. I was having difficulties tracking down the system. I was not sure what kind of a system Zidane was using. Kind of settled for a 2-4-3-1, something like that, or maybe even 2-4-2 at times, with Cruz and Casemiro being like a double pivot, if you will. Casemiro obviously being the deeper player on the pitch, and Cruz advancing up a bit higher. But interestingly enough, Carvajal would cut inside, and then Fede Valverde would go out wide, which was just quite interesting to see. I mean, and he was huge on the night. He was so energetic. He was going up and down the pitch. He was chasing every ball. And he, at the moment, I feel like he's like growing into this huge presence in Real Madrid's midfield. And there's a huge future for the kid if he can sustain this going forward. And, you know, then Benzema up front, who had a pretty decent game as well. He was dropping deep when necessary. He was pulling back markers like he used to do, you know, back in the day as well. And this is what he does well. This is where he thrives, where he can perform really well. And then you have Vinicius on the left side, who was really a focal point. He was really wreaking havoc through Barca's defense. And he finally got that goal, which was missing for for a long time. So pretty good stuff for him.
Yeah. And in scoring that goal, he actually broke Messi's record as the youngest El Clasico goal scorer, beat it by 26. So not a bad time that goal in. So for me, the big surprise was Marcelo's inclusion. He definitely brings a little bit more to the table than Mendy in terms of the attacking side of the game. With Mendy, you're pretty confident he's going to stick to that left wing. He doesn't really tend to cut inside. Whereas with Marcelo, you could see every chance he got, he was looking to break into that half space and combine with Benzema, with Isco. So I think he, while the deliveries into the box weren't of the highest quality today, or in that game, he definitely brought something a little bit different that, we just don't see from Mendy. I think that freed up a little bit of space for Vinicius out wide, gave him more true 1v1s. So we saw him be a little more influential in this game than in previous La Liga matches. But for me, the big thing with this Madrid lineup was the presence of Cruz. Zidane righted that wrong. He got Cruz back in the lineup. And, they just looked more assured in possession. When they did look to break forward, they were able to get the ball to his feet and let him be that distributor, let him dictate the pace of the game. And you have to, on that Vinicius goal, you have to give a lot of credit to Kroos. He really sold across to the back post that opened up the lane for Vinicius. Beautiful slotted ball. And a quality shot from Vinicius, although I would also argue that Ter Stegen had some issues with his positioning on that play. He was beaten really easily at the near post.
Yeah, I think that had a big deflection. I mean, it was kind of typical of Vinicius, really, wasn't it? I mean, he was so active throughout the game, and in the first half especially, you saw him get the ball run down the wing so many times, and then kind of get into the final third, and there was just no end product, which is the story always with Vinicius, is that he's so exciting. I mean, he's one of those players that really gets fans on the edge of their seats. He really disrupts tactical systems, and he's a real asset to Real Madrid. But just getting into that final third, he just doesn't have any threat whatsoever, whether it's the cross, which is poor usually, or his shooting, which is just as bad. And then obviously against Barcelona, he got a bit lucky. I mean, that goal, I think it was a lucky goal. I mean, it was a tame effort which deflected off PK and kind of wrong footed to stay. So then, I mean, if he doesn't score that, and then you're looking back on it and the chances he had and the chances he wasted by playing the wrong final ball, I think we could look back on Vinicius' performance very differently.
Yeah, that's true, definitely. I feel like at times what Marcelo's inclusion also did, with Marcelo going forward and being that wide man on the left, I saw Vinicius actually sprinting into the box to company. He was basically a striker at some point during the game as well. supporting Benzema up front, which was pretty interesting because usually when he was the one, when Benzema would drop and lay off the ball for Vinicius and he would then sprint down the flank, you know, talking about past games, and then Vinicius would look up and there was usually no one in the box. And I feel like this change, this inclusion of Marcelo specifically, kind of solved that, because if you have Marcelo who's running down the wing and then Vinicius can cut inside and go into the box next to, you know, Benzema or whoever it is out there, you have, you know, a bit more of a presence there. You have more people, more bodies in the box to, you know, kind of send those balls out wide to the box into those players. So that was one thing that I feel like Zidane tried to somehow switch up. But yeah, as you said, Vinicius was, you know, him specifically, he was, I feel like there was a lot of excitement from the Bernabeu crowd. They were like, wow, Vinicius is good. And then you would hear like a thunderous moans, like, oh no, he messed it up again. So that's kind of the story of his whole journey with Real Madrid so far. But I feel like he's probably improved. He's the kind of player that thrives on that confidence. And once he gets the first goal, he just comes alive again. And I think that he can ride that wave and then become better as he goes, I mean, hopefully for Real Madrid.
Well, one of the issues, you know, building off that point, one of the issues with Vinicius's deliveries is that because you have no one in the box, you know, no one may be stretching the defense, making a near post run, pulling defenders away from the middle of the box, every cross really had to be negative, didn't it? I mean, there weren't many opportunities for him to, you know, flash it across the goal, you know, from 6 yards out. There wasn't someone at the back post that he could, you know, play the flight of ball. He really had to go negative with almost all of his deliveries into the box. And at that point, when you have a Barcelona line that is back at their six, they're ready to come forward to meet the ball. It was a little bit too predictable from the Madrid attack, you know, big picture scheme of things. It's just a little too easy to pick out. You know, all the Madrid numbers were at the top of the box, so of course that's where the cross is going. So, and that's one of the things you lose when you have Isco playing more of a true 10 role. When you look at their average starting points for this game, he almost was that top of the diamond player. You saw Valverde, you know, definitely offset more to the right, starting position, pretty close to that right half space, looking to make his runs up that wing and combined with Carvajal. But there was no one getting to the back post. So, you know, it definitely could have been better from Vinicius. Deliveries could have been much cleaner into the box. And, you know, maybe at some point he just realizes he has to put a foot on the ball and recycle play rather than try to force that cross. But as a whole, if Real Madrid does want to play that style, they've got to get someone a little bit higher to create a little bit of space for that negative pass to the penalty spot.
Yeah, although I think you could say at the same time that watching the Barcelona team and their midfield, it wasn't the best example of showing Vinicius how he should recycle the ball and not be looking for the way through.
Yeah, I mean, overall, looking at the lineup Setien chose, there were not really many surprises. I think we were all kind of hoping, let's say, that he plays Bradford from the very start, but it was not to be this time. So, this lineup on paper had everything, like it had all the makings of a diamond in the field, but I felt like at times Vidal was once again starting from the wide areas and then cut inside. So I guess Barca's lineup would at times look like a flat 4-4-2 instead of a 4-4-2 diamond. And I think this was once again Barca's biggest weakness, apart from, you know, missing sitters. That's their specialty lately. But they lacked width tremendously. Again, once again, they were just focusing on the central zones. They were trying to penetrate through that zone 14, and they're just not going to work when you have players like, you know, Varane and Casemiro and even Valverde checking back, all physical and aggressive players who can control that zone pretty well, and they can block a full penetration coming from those zones. And they just didn't have anyone on the wings. I mean, yeah, sure, you have Alba and Semedo, who were basically the only width providers for Barca on the night. And this is a problem that probably goes all the way back to, you know, when Neymar Jr. left the club, and, you know, we don't want to go so much back. So, and a couple of times in the night when Barca were actually trying to use, you know, Griezmann and Alba combining on the left, trying to make those overloads over Carvajal, it worked. You know, it immediately there were results, and they had one of the best chances in the game. But for the most part, they were so static. There was no movement again, and they would just go through the middle, and it wouldn't work for some reason, because, you know, Madrid was ready for that. They were crowding those areas of the pitch, and Barca refused to go wide or couldn't go wide for some reason. I mean, this all comes down to bad planning as well, because, you know, they sold their players and they have Dembele who's injured and whatnot. So I feel like that was a huge problem for Barcelona on the night. You know, just no width, center penetration that didn't work, and then the lack of any combinations out wide with the fullbacks.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the main difference that Braithwaite made when he did come on. I mean, because he just kind of made a bit more, his runs were a bit more vertical, he's a bit more dangerous, and he looked kind of exploit that gap in between the central defenders and the fullbacks to get him behind Marcelo when he moved up. And it was something that Griezmann just hadn't really done at any point. I mean, Griezmann's movement was very slow, it was very lateral, it was all quite mundane, almost very much like the midfield, very much like Barcelona in general, really just not quite offering any kind of incision or penetration. And Braithwaite, obviously, he's not got the quality of a player like Griezmann, but he was the kind of player who'd get on there and make those runs. And even if it meant that 9 times out of 10 it wouldn't come to anything, that one time it did. And I mean, as soon as he came on, he made that run down the right-hand side, and it led to a big chance for him. So it was perhaps another example of perhaps why Setien should have started him for this one. And I don't think Barcelona did look a little bit more dangerous just after he came on. And if he'd had some of the chances that Barcelona had in the first half when they were a bit more dominant, Real Madrid were a bit further back, it would have been interesting to see how he would have fared compared to, say, Antoine Griezmann, kind of in that central strike.
Yeah, he had that chance right after coming on. But I thought it was odd that they put him on that right-hand side, especially given that he'd have to drop back with Marcelo and try to provide a little bit of defensive support. So on that Vinicius Jr. goal, it was actually Braithwaite who was marking Vinicius. He had switched off with Semedo. So Braithwaite was initially with Vinicius Jr., didn't track the run in behind and give him that clear path to goal. So I don't know about you guys, I would have liked to have seen him play higher up the field, a little more centrally. I know Messi's not going to be the guy to track back and defend, but, you know, Barcelona had defended all game without, you know, the use of Messi and Griezmann, so I don't see how they couldn't have just made a slight tweak to keep Braithwaite up top.
Was now the perfect time to kind of touch on the topic that DK dared to mention in our preview podcast? DK the prophet.
I guess it would be, yeah. Yeah, so last week we kind of slightly touched upon Lionel Messi being, let's just say, a bit off color in the last couple of weeks. I mean, he did score 4 goals against Eibar, and that was a really off color. But no,
not much else.
Oh, yeah, only 4 goals. Not much else, yeah. He just scored 4 goals, nothing else. So he didn't do much, right? But yeah, I mean, in general, I feel like people are kind of afraid to criticize Messi, and to an extent, I really understand this, because the whole team should be criticized because they're not playing well as a unit, and this is a huge problem in general. But I feel like Messi, be it due to that, maybe that injury or just Setien's tactics, maybe he's not really into the system, you know, fully just yet. But it does feel like he is not playing to that, you know, inhuman standard that we usually, you know, have for him. And just to mention a couple of stats for this one, Messi and Griezmann combined have missed a total of 16 big chances since Setien's appointment, and Messi alone has missed 11 big chances in this season, and seven of those have come during Setien's era, let's call it reign or whatever. So I feel like when you compare this to his 13 missed chances in 2018-19, it's a big difference. I mean, he's already up there with 12 games to go, and that does indicate that he's kind of not as clinical in front of goal. And he also had like two chances against Real Madrid that he could have. You would expect him to bury those chances. Let's just put it that way. And Messi kind of looked. It's so sad to say, but he kind of looked his age against Real Madrid because, you know, he didn't have the pace to beat the defenders or didn't have, you know, his sights set in the goal or something like that. So definitely something to analyze, to you know, dissect a bit further, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me was quite how deep he went. I mean, there was one point, I think it was in the first half, when Barcelona looked to break and Messi had done his typical of sitting a bit further back and seeing what would happen. But he was so far back that when the counter-attack did come, he was almost in the right-back position covering for Nelson Semedo. And then all of a sudden you had Arthur looking to play a ball into the box and there was nobody to play it to. There was no Messi there to be the focal point. I mean, you're looking at it like that and you're thinking Messi's kind of the leader in this Barcelona attack. He's kind of the creative force. He's the player they're always turning to. And then at the Bernabeu, they're on the counter-attack and they find that Messi's at right-back. I mean, it was just kind of symbolic of his off-the-ball movement, which has all been a bit lax in the last few weeks. I mean, he's definitely beginning to look a bit tired, a bit physically struggling. I don't know if that's because of the injury, as we touched on in the last point. There's been speculation about him having and carrying an injury for the last few months, or whether it's his age or whether it's other factors. I mean, it just doesn't seem to be as switched on, as motivated, as active off the ball more than anything else. I mean, he's always shown that he's got quality on the ball to make a big impact, but it's off the ball where, for me, he's been lacking.
Yeah, and after Real Madrid got their goal, you saw Messi drop back even further. You saw the frustration foul against Casemiro. You could definitely see that the impending result was getting to him. But even today, you know, when Barcelona had their best chances, Messi was somehow involved. The 30th minute, there was the run from Vidal in behind Marcelo, right, between Marcelo and Ramos. He was able to get it in the box, played it back to Griezmann, who set up Messi. Very tame effort on goal. 4 minutes later, Barcelona had set up the 1v1 with Arthur going against Courtois. Messi's role there is that he had pulled Ramos so far from covering Varane that Ramos couldn't recover and get back in the play. You know, there was just always that eye on Messi, even when he had dropped off into the midfield and was really not going to be involved in any quick attack going forward. And then there was the 37th minute chance where Marcelo didn't track Messi's run. Busquets plays that beautiful ball over the top. Poor first touch off of Messi's chest, puts the ball right into Varane's path. Messi still got the shot off, but right at Courtois. So a nice, easy save. And then the last one, the one that really stood out to me, and this is where I do question why Braithwaite wasn't up top. Messi did have that breakaway in the 75th minute. The only person who could stop him was Marcelo. I guess Varane was actually in the vicinity of the ball too. But Marcelo, of all people, ended up catching Messi, making a great tackle. And you just think that if Braithwaite's in, and if he is central, he's probably getting on goal. I don't think either Marcelo or Varane, with that longer recovery run, are catching him.
Yeah, no, there's that stat that's been shared quite widely on social media and things of the fact that Marcelo's top speed was higher than Messi's. I mean, everybody often talks about Marcelo being past it, about being way past his best, and he's done, he's finished, and he was quicker than Messi in a crucial moment. I mean, was it the Bernabeu, and it was celebrated more wildly than the goal, because it was kind of the moment where all of a sudden Messi looked human for Real Madrid fans, and it was kind of the moment that most summed up his evening, kind of the moment where you always expect him to score that goal and to bring Barca back into it, even when they don't really deserve it, just because he's Lionel Messi, and that's what he couldn't do on Sunday.
And you would actually expect Messi to kind of thrive in this kind of game, because it was a really open game. It's not like Barca faced a deep block and they had to, you know, fight their way through 11 players all the time. It was mostly an open affair, and usually this is where Messi would, you know, destroy you, and people usually don't dare to go against Messi in this kind of setup. So I was kind of, you know, definitely expecting him to score or set up something, but it just wasn't to be. And it just feels like if Messi was, you know, at his usual level, at least one or two of those chances would have gone in, you know, definitely. Just the way I see it. And you also could be due to him, as you said, starting too deep, or sometimes he was even starting, you know, out wide, all the way on the right wing, which is, you know, you definitely need wingers in your game, but Messi is not really the one to do that role, because you're just wasting him out wide, because he has to expend more energy, he doesn't really have the pace to be a proper winger anymore. So definitely a huge loss for Barca in that regard. And also, we also touched upon having both Vidal and Braithwaite in the same lineup. It's kind of one would, you know, make the other one redundant. And the same thing happened tonight, you know, and it's just that Vidal wasn't really, I feel like he didn't have the impact that Barca wanted him to have. And maybe having Braithwaite from the very beginning would have been a better choice for City, and it just feels like it.
Yeah, and I mean, I really think they missed an opportunity with Marcelo Cummings. You know, just like Messi was involved in all of Barcelona's best chances, so was Marcelo. It was typically Marcelo and Ramos getting disconnected, allowing that 2-5 or 3-5 gap to become unlocked. That was creating chances for Barcelona, and I didn't think they really attacked it enough. And Marcelo was very active in the attack, and, you know, the recovery runs were not always there. Granted, Cruz was there in coverage, and actually thought Cruz was brilliant today on both sides of the ball. But there was just not enough of a focus from Barcelona to really attack that space. And even though Messi was in that general area, you know, just not the kind of impact that we've come to expect from him. He only attempted 6 dribbles, successful in 2 of them. He had 24 duels, successful in 7. That's 29%, and 14 losses. So just not the kind of performance we've come to expect. And, you know, unfortunately, this is the reality that we football fans have got to deal with. You know, the Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi years, they're in their twilight, so... just enjoy them while we can.
Yeah, one thing for me, kind of changing topics slightly, but looking at the Real Madrid team, I mean, we looked at it and you see the kind of the likes of Toni Kroos, Luka Modric, who came on as a substitute, Benzema, they were all kind of the Isco as well, kind of players who were a bit older, not quite as energetic as they once were. Yet they deployed quite a high press and they managed to sustain it all the way through, which has been something that when I've seen Real Madrid play this season, they've really struggled to do. I mean, they've sometimes had that higher press and used it quite well, but then it's only lasted, you know, 10, 15 minutes and they've faded off again. But against Barcelona, they did it really well. I mean, every time Ter Stegen was on the ball, they looked to have kind of the man-to-man marking almost in the Barcelona half, and they made life really difficult for him. So it was quite evident early on that he was still trying to play the short passes out from the back and quite quickly got frustrated and then ended up taking some longer passes that didn't result in anything. And I think that was really important to how Real Madrid kind of penned Barcelona into their own half almost, was a little spell in the second half. And that momentum really was what led to Vinicius' goal. I mean, the fans were behind them and Real Madrid suddenly looked a lot more positive, a lot more optimistic on the ball. I mean, as you said earlier, Scott, they weren't very good in the first half. They weren't at their best. They didn't look particularly confident. But in the second half, they really kind of picked up and they were willing to take him on. They were willing to have a go at goal from distance. And it definitely seemed to be that press that kind of helped them feel more comfortable and made Barcelona kind of on the back foot before they even began, it was quite an influential factor.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, I'd say. For me, Madrid, they looked the most dangerous when they were, at the peak of their aggressiveness, when they were really aggressive and they were really energetic and pushing Barca, to the limit. So think about those first 20 minutes when their press was really, 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 really strong, really high. And then in the second half as well, when they had the crowd, as you said, behind them, that was when they had full control of the game. And it was a similar thing against Manchester City as well. I mean, when they were pressing well, things were really good for them, and City were even having trouble building for them back, which is something they are famous for, especially under Guardiola, so it doesn't really come as a surprise. And Barca, they traditionally struggle. I mean, they had Arthur, Busquets, and De Jong in midfield, and all three of them are really press resistant, and yet they had trouble getting the ball successfully out of from the back into the midfield and into the final third. Definitely feels like this is something that Zidane has found a way to kind of successfully implement into his game once again. And I feel like players like Federico Valverde, they are really massive in this regard, because he has that energy, he has that pace, and just he was just physically so superior to every other player on the pitch. I felt like he was constantly even outrunning Jordi Alba, which I thought that Alba was one of the fastest players on the pitch, if not the fastest on the pitch, but Valverde was just outrunning him and outmuscling him in every duel, and he looked so superior, and I feel like this was one of the edges that Madrid had over Barca, because Barca, on the other hand, in modern game, it's all about the intensity, about the speed, about that counter pressing effectively, and Barca simply don't have that in them, because be it heavy legs or their older squad or whatever it is, they just cannot replicate that, and that's a huge disadvantage to have, especially in modern football. So at the end of the day, I feel like Madrid, when they were aggressive and they were pushing forward, that's when they looked the best.
Yeah, and you're going to have the most success against this Madrid team when you break that initial press. We've seen chunks of each game. I think the last 15 to 20 minutes of the first half, especially in this Clásico, where that press wasn't necessarily working, and you saw Barcelona breaking lines. They were finding the wide outlets who were mostly left unmarked. And, they were able to establish possession in the Madrid half of the field and create quality chances. That said, when this press is on, it's incredibly difficult to break their lines. I mean, that's, I think, primarily why Madrid has allowed the fewest goals in La Liga this season. Why, when you look at expected goals against, they're second only to Atletico. It's just so difficult to break this man press in that or in your own defensive third. That especially if it's your goalie or your less reliable center back who has to take that initiative as the distributor, you're probably not going to break the line. And then all of a sudden, when there is that turnover, you're not going to win the second ball either, because the Madrid players orient themselves so that even as they're man marking, they still have the inside lane. So they're more or less protected in the middle, so that when any ball enters that central channel, or even one of the half spaces, it's the Madrid players who have the easiest route to the ball. So that's something that I'm writing about in the near future. It's that ability of Zidane to rally his troops to counter press quickly, to force a negative pass, and while that's happening, find your mark, man up, and then allow the opponent to play into your pressure. So, I mean, there's not many players who are going to beat Varane or Ramos in the air. If they play into Casemiro, you might as well just get your defensive shape. He's going to win that ball. There's very little hope. So, you really do have to get out quickly against this side. The only outlets you'll really have are those wide players, and even getting to them, you have to go inside into that Madrid pressure and then generally play first time out to the wings to break Madrid. And that's just not very easy.
Not easy at all. But I would say that a bit of credit has to be given to Barcelona as well, because even though they struggled against the press, you know, in the early stages and, well, for the majority of the second half as well, but they did find some success in escaping the press. I feel like this is something that has improved at Barcelona under Setién, especially because he uses Ter Stegen as the an outfield player, if you will. He, even as a center back, you know, he pushes him forward in between the two center backs, and then that makes like a numerical superiority against the pressing squad. So if usually Madrid would press with, you know, with Benzema and Isco, who would make curving runs between the center backs and like cover shadow them so that Ter Stegen cannot find them. But the, but if he goes forward, that, you know, makes it 3-2, and then Busquets doesn't have to drop all the way deeper, and then he can stay a bit higher up the pitch and then counter the collapse from the Madrid midfielders. And since they all kind of pressed in a man-marking manner, you know, the man-for-man, it was a really heavy man-marking press, it could be manipulated. And we've seen midfielders dropping deeper and pulling the markers away, and then that would free space in behind their backs, and then Ter Stegen could, you know, send the ball over the top into the path of Semedo or Alba, who would be, you know, free in that regard. So there were ways for Barca to exploit this man-marking press, and they did well at some point of the game. It was just not consistent enough. It was not enough to, you know, give them an edge at the end of the day, I guess.
Yeah, and Ter Stegen, I mean, it was quite almost funny at sometimes where Real Madrid would sit back a little bit and kind of reserve their energy and kind of wait for Ter Stegen to play the first ball out and then see what happened. They'd have that man-to-man approach and not really give him any options. But then Ter Stegen was quite happy just to walk forwards with the ball and just keep going up until somebody kind of engaged with him, because Ter Stegen would have been quite happy to dribble it up the other end and have a shot himself if he could have. So it was quite an interesting one to see how far he was going before Real Madrid did decide to engage with him, particularly later on in the second half. And then obviously up in injury time, even in the first minute of injury time, Ter Stegen was up at the other end going there for the goal kick and for the free kick, sorry, and trying to get the equaliser, but it didn't quite happen. But it was certainly an interesting kind of tactical role for Ter Stegen to kind of work against that press and find a way to play out from, just to walk straight up through the middle and hope that nobody would come and close him down.
I mean, at the end of the day, it was... Oh, sorry, yeah. I know, I just wanted to say that it was a pretty close game, and I would say that Madrid deservedly won, even though, you know, when you look at the XG battle, it was slightly in Barca's favor, 1.66 versus 1.15. And it was, I mean, truth be told, it was two pretty... I don't want to call them sloppy goals, but, you know, kind of one was deflection and the other one was, you know, kind of it was a good shot, but still kind of Mariano didn't really hit it the way he wanted to, and it was a bit lucky as well. But I would say that it's still pretty deserved win for Madrid.
Yeah, I think for me, Barcelona could have almost been out of sight before half time. I mean, Arthur had a great chance and Griezmann as well, and either one of those goes in, and then it's a very different game entirely. But I think the way that Barcelona kind of collapsed in the second half and Real Madrid were just a lot more clinical, I think it was definitely a justifiable win for Zidane's team, and not necessarily a tactical masterclass, but they certainly seem to be the more aware and kind of the better informed about their opponents, and their players did. I mean, it's kind of a lazy argument to make almost, but they did just seem to want it more. They seem to be a bit more motivated and a bit more up for it than a lot of the Barcelona team, and they did kind of have that ambition. I mean, when the ball went into midfield, Proust was always looking to play it forwards, looking to get to the wide men, whereas it wasn't the same for Barcelona. I mean, it would go into De Jong or Arthur and it'd be kind of the same sideways passes, not too much movement ahead of them, and it was all just very turgid from Barcelona, whereas Real Madrid kind of had that ambition and they kind of paid off for them really with the two goals that were very well deserved. So a big win for them, and I think they deserved it.
And you got the sense that once the second half started, Barcelona just kind of lost a little bit of that momentum. They really never seemed to come into the game in the second half. They had, one, maybe two decent chances in the second half, but for the most part, just overall very poor quality from them after the intermission, and just a lot of pressure from Real Madrid. It'll be interesting to see how Barcelona adapts after this encounter. As we mentioned in the last podcast, this is really the first time they've had a chance to play an open game under Setien. So, what did they learn? Where did they try and make some improvements? And can they use this match as a blueprint to future Champions League games if they do beat Napoli and progress?
Yeah, how do we kind of see the rest of the season unfolding after this one? Because, I really wouldn't be surprised to see Barcelona kind of continue their second half collapse across the rest of the season. They are only 1 point behind with 12 games left to go, but it's a big psychological damage. There's a lot of players not at their best. There's doubts about Setien and his approach. Up next, they've got Real Sociedad, which probably aren't the team that they choose to face coming off the back of this game. So, a couple of bad or not convincing performances results in the next few weeks. And if they don't keep up the pressure on Real Madrid, then I think this season could peter out quite quickly for them.
It could go either way. I feel like this Clásico was just, as I said, it was entertaining, but it was not really a high standard Clásico. And I could definitely see both teams dropping more points until the end of the season. So I guess it comes down to which team can, be more consistent in their displays and win more games. But it's difficult for me to kind of judge or criticize Setien because, he was really dealt a bad hand, a really bad hand with his squad, and the timing of his appointment was also really odd and weird. Most of the coaches, the successful ones like, Rijkaard or even Lucho, they all needed some time to get going, to get that team where they wanted it to be. So I guess he just needs a bit more time. But funnily enough, both Madrid and Barca could go trophyless. And I feel like, La Liga is their biggest shot. Madrid are all, 1 foot out of the Champions League already against City. It's not over yet, but it's a difficult situation. And Barca just don't look, I just don't see them winning the Champions League, even if they progress past Napoli, which I feel they will. But I just don't see them winning it. So La Liga might be the ultimate prize for either of those teams this season. So I feel they're going to fight for it, wholeheartedly, if you will.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, if let's say Barcelona progresses in the Champions League, Real Madrid gets knocked out. Is Real Madrid able to benefit from lost points? If Barcelona does have that midweek game on their minds as they're playing, one of these middle tier La Liga sides, Barcelona still has a few very difficult games coming up. They'll host Atletico a little ways down the road, and they'll host Real Sociedad this weekend, but they still have to travel to Sevilla, and they have a game in May at Villarreal. So there's definitely some tougher games on the schedule for Barcelona mixed in with those potential Champions League dates. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of balance Setien is able to strike, and if this squad can manage the rigor of the two competitions.
Yeah, that's it. So keep tuned to Total Football Analysis and to the podcast over the next few weeks to see just what happens for both of these teams, Real Madrid and Barcelona, in the Champions League and in La Liga as well. Plenty left to play for both sides, even after Real Madrid came out on top in this Clásico duel. And also stay tuned on the website, totalfootballanalysis.com, for the latest analysis of the Clásico and of all the rest of the La Liga fixtures this weekend. Thanks for listening, and see you all next week for the next podcast.